Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Your podcast.
For antiques.
Just kidding, it's my podcast.
Wait, no.
For antiques.
For antiques. This week, we will be talking about an old friend.
Oh, no. I don't think we've made any friends I care to revisit in this podcast.
Perhaps an old frenemy?
Oh, boy.
Welcome to the official history of Christie's.
Oh boy, we're bringing the heat, huh?
Also known as Christie's Histories.
But what about Christie's Mysteries?
Or perhaps even a Christery.
But what about the Christery Mystery?
Someday we'll have Christie's Mysteries.
Will there be a Christie's Miracle?
According to Christie's, every sale's a Christie's Miracle.
According to me, every sale's a Christie's Miracle. At this point, I don't know if you can trust them.
What am Christie's?
Auction.
Yes. Christie's is an auction house. It's the one that isn't Sotheby's.
It's always just like an auction place, and then people just get their blanket and you're like, not the Sotheby's one. And I'm like,
The other one. The other one. She went into the sea.
Sotheby's? Oh, that was a Rebecca reference. Shit. Slow, but I'm starting to spot them faster.
Finally, someone besides me and my sister gets it. You may recognize Christie's from our episode on the Pope chest, the Salem witchcraft artifact that sold for $2.4 million.
Yes, at Christie's.
And the antiques fraud Jefferson wine episode.
Yes, they figure prominently into that one.
But how did this all begin?
How did it all begin? What was the first lie?
It might be the date they were founded.
Are you kidding me?
No.
What?
So according to Christie's official history on their website, and just in general, all official company literature, they were founded in 1766 was their first sale.
Yeah.
But there are newspaper advertisements for Christie's sales dating back to 1759.
Huh.
So either the first 7 years of sales are something they'd rather forget, or they're just really bad at their own record keeping. We don't know.
That's already the first Christie mystery.
Yeah.
Which is, wait, why did you guys goof up that bad at being you? Did you guys forget you were a company for 7 years?
Listen, I forgot I was a company for 7 years.
This dude woke up and he was like, I've been selling and trading. Somebody write it down!
What do you mean I'm an auctioneer?
What the fuck?
For how long?
What are you talking about? You just been selling my stuff? And that's also the story of the first divorce.
So Christie's official history is available on its website, Christie's.com. In the least accessible format possible.
What, a PDF?
A slideshow.
Oh, good God, gravy.
How many slides, Dee?
Ballpark, 43.
Shockingly close. 55.
That's really upsetting. I was really, you know, sometimes you make these jokes thinking you're right, and sometimes you make these jokes with just like, it's way too much, it's stupid, this is a dumb guess.
55 slides. Girlfriend's age? 55. My IQ? 55.
Whoa, callback!
Christie's IQ, apparently 55 as well. There's no read as a single page option. There is no ability to highlight text. So I had to screenshot each individual slide.
Why?
Because I hate myself and also this podcast.
We don't want anyone stealing our history.
We don't want anyone stealing our official history of our company that we fully control and apparently want to disseminate to potential customers.
No.
Except no. No. God forbid they take this information anywhere but our website.
Keep the secrecies.
I think that one needs work.
Ah, it was a little rough, yeah.
So I will not be reading out each one of these 55 slides, because if we spent 1 minute per slide, that is a 55-minute raw recording already.
Incredible.
Yeah. So I'm gonna be skimming a bit, but not much, because I'm also detail-oriented, and this is fucking ridiculous. So again, according to Christie's official narrative, the first sale was in 1766... James Christie holds his first sale in his permanent sales room at Pall Mall in London. Who is James Christie? No one knows.
A great start to a history. Eh, Some dude.
Some guy. In 1778, they negotiate the sale of the art collection of the first Prime Minister of England.
Oh, okay, yeah, this is, alright.
And also, Thomas Gainsborough paints James Christie's portrait to hang in his sale room.
We still don't know who he is, though?
I mean, Christie's does, but they're not telling us. 1780, Christie's wants us to know that they sold the painting Gimcrack on Newmarket Heath.
Yeah, you know, you ever go downtown and you see that?
This is the first time they sell the painting. They end up selling it four times over the years, most recently in 2011 for $22 million.
Wow. Gimcrack indeed.
Which is more than doubling the previous record for sales price for that particular artist. This painting is considered a masterpiece in the history of sporting art. It's one of those, like, paintings of horses before we had a camera. So it,
oh.
It's got a look.
Plays it fast and loose with the proportions, I see.
It's got a look. Christie's also wants us to note that this year is the approximate beginning of the Romantic era in European literature and art.
Thanks, Christie's.
Thank you, Christie's. Where would we be without you?
Ignorant.
1785, they sell the library of the deceased Dr. Samuel Johnson.
Right on. Who is that?
I know of him mostly through reading other 19th century literature. During the first half of the 19th century, he was considered pretty much the greatest writer, orator, literary guy.
Okay.
It's very dry writing because 1785 was before we invented flow in language.
Before they thought of tone.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've heard of him, it's probably because he gets name dropped in like Thackeray and Austen.
Oh, okay. He's one of those.
One of those. In 1789, Christie's would like to take credit for the French Revolution.
That's great, Christie's. What?
Outbreak of the French Revolution. Over the next 10 years, the exodus of French aristocrats brings many French objects onto the art market in England.
Hey, Christie's. Not something I'd brag about. Hey, Christie's. Hey, Christie's, were you going to talk about how? We gonna talk about how those came onto the market? Hey, Christie's, are we gonna talk about that? Christie's, is there something you would like to add?
In 1794...
Hey, Christie's, wait!
James Christie the Younger, Christie's son, takes his first sale, replacing his father after the latter is wearied by a six-day sale.
Whoa, wait, that, alright.
So James Christie number one fucking auctioneers for six straight days and his son has to take over.
Wait, it was one sale, like one block of goods.
Yeah.
Wait, was this because of the French Revolution?
I have no idea.
There's so much dead people's stuff coming in that he was just like, I can't sleep, but can he? And then he faints and the boy's like, Papa, I will sell these ill-gotten goods for you, Papa. You know, meanwhile, the French citizenry is screaming and blood is pooling in the streets because the revolution stopped discriminating a long time ago. Christie's, I love it already.
How she sings, Madame Guillotine.
And interestingly enough, I have a guillotine right here on the auction block.
No, they were still using it. It wasn't for sale yet. In 1795... Christie's sells the contents of the studio of leading portrait artist Joshua Reynolds, including Susanna and the Elders by Rembrandt. In 2015, experts discovered that Reynolds had made significant changes to Rembrandt's painting.
Oh, Mr. Reynolds!
While it was in his possession, presumed to have been an attempt to improve the work.
Amazing! You ever get a hold of an old master and you're like, I ain't like this girl's face?
Do you ever get your hands on a Rembrandt and think, I can do better?
I feel like it's really important to note that Rembrandt was considered an old master at that time. Like, Rembrandt was an old master pretty much like the second he hit the scene. So it's not like, oh, it wasn't as important then. It absolutely was.
We're on page two.
You look at a Rembrandt and you're just like, yeah, okay, watch me go.
Same year. Sale of the collection of Madame du Barry, mistress of King Louis XV after her execution in 1793. Now, you may notice some things about the composition of that sentence.
Yeah, I noticed a couple things.
It very strongly implies that Madame du Barry only became the mistress of King Louis XV after her execution in 1793.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. I don't, like, doubt it.
I have a lot of sympathy for the poor intern Christie's maid compile and...
For 6 days straight.
Compiled.
And was then made weak.
This slideshow.
I'm also noticing a trend about the provenance of their objects.
I mean, you know. So in 1801, Admiral Horatio Nelson arranges the private purchase of a portrait of his mistress Emma Hamilton before it appears in the sale room. Nelson paid £300 for the work, later declaring, "If it had cost me 300 drops of blood, I would have given it with pleasure."
It's not that much blood. It's not that much blood. I'd rather pay that way.
D. Nelson's over here being goth as fuck, and you're gonna call him out like that?
Oh, I mean, that's totally goth, but mostly I was just like, man, you're gonna get caught if you're actually commissioning paintings of your side chick. It's unsubtle behavior.
Antiques freaks would like to add a fun fact onto this. Did you know Nelson and Wellington are two completely different dudes?
Wait, what?
Admiral Nelson and General Wellington are two completely different people.
Okay. Oh. Huh.
Did you have the same problem I had when I was studying up on British history?
Yeah.
Where you filed both Nelson and Wellington under the same tag of important British military dude in the early 19th century?
Yeah, Nellington.
Yeah, exactly! It's like a exactly!
Ship wars.
I didn't... Yeah. In Nelson's case, yes. So I didn't figure out my mistake until I read Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, in which Wellington is a living character and Nelson is deceased.
Oh, that's... okay.
And because they both appear in two very different states of being at the same time in the same work, I finally put it together that they could not, in fact, both be the same guy.
God, it's like Face-Off. You have to kill one for you to realize the truth.
In my defense, famous British people tend to have no fewer than 15 last names apiece, depending on when, what point in your life they're talking about. So, it's not, like, out of the question that a dude who was once named Admiral Nelson could later be referred to as the Duke of Wellington.
No, yeah, no, you're completely right. Like, the British gentry name change factory is, like...
stupid.
Yeah, you're just like, hey, I heard about that guy, Sir Doffington. And they're like, oh, you mean Ace Ventura? Pet detective? And you're like, oh, did he do that too? And then someone else is like, hey, are you guys talking about the third Duke of Windsor? And then you're like, yeah, you mean Ace Ventura? And you're like, yeah, the Duke of...
Little known fact, fourth in line to the British throne has the courtesy title of pet detective.
Pet detective, yeah. He has to go... He's the guy who gets the corgis back.
Whenever they're kidnapped for ransom.
Yeah.
He's the one who gets the corgis back. It's been 15 minutes and we've just finished page 2 of these notes.
It's fucking... I just need to take a minute for the fact that I can't think of British names.
Well, because you know that nothing you make up will ever be as stupid as what they actually are.
Yeah, it's like Sir Crumblington Toast Jim. Like,
you mean Bready Toast Crumble Snacks?
Yeah.
So in 1815, Christie's wants us to note the Battle of Waterloo.
Hey, Christie's, why are you saying this?
Because the Battle of Waterloo ends Napoleon's domination of Europe and signals a gradual lessening of French influence over European politics and culture.
Are they saying that now we have less dead French dude stuff?
I don't know.
What does this have to do with the Christies? Why are they telling us this?
I don't know.
Are they taking credit?
Maybe? But in 1823, the auction house moves from Pall Mall to 8 King Street, the present London headquarters.
All right.
Finally, a historical fact actually related to Christie's.
Oh, here's the thing. I actually, all these years, I never realized Christie's was a British company.
Right? I thought they were the American imitation of Sotheby's.
Yeah. I thought it was New York-based. I was so wrong.
Well, in 1823, it's London-based. That may change.
Okay.
In 1824, the National Gallery opens in London.
Yeah, you guys do that too, Christie's?
With a collection based in part on purchases from Christie's.
And there it is.
Also, Christie's issues its first illustrated sales catalog.
Oh, wow. Were they the first to do that?
No.
Okay.
It's just...
No, they just wanted us to know that they did it.
We did it too.
Yeah, hey,
Us too.
Yeah, me too.
We did it. Also, as well. In 1827, J.M.W. Turner buys his own painting, Sun Rising Through Vapor, paying just over 480 guineas, which is equivalent to £514, for the work when it is offered at auction.
Wait. Okay, and you just introduced the thing. I actually do know, like, a fair bit about J.M. Turner. What? They just let J.M. Turner commit auction fraud? Or is that just, or is it not fraud if it's the saddest thing you've ever heard?
I think what happened is he painted it, sold it to a guy, that guy died or got too much in debt, so we had to put his shit up for auction, and J.M. Turner had, at that point, gotten rich and famous enough to buy his own work back.
Oh, okay.
I think. Christie's doesn't tell us, so I have to make this up.
I hope so. The thing is, when you said it, I was picturing J.M. Turner in a mustache just going like, whoa, what a cool painting. I must have it. This guy's clearly a genius.
Whoever painted this must be handsome.
You just be so sexy. I hear he's got some new work on J.M. Turner Studio Street. That's crazy. I'm going to buy this one.
Only a man with an enormous dick could paint this.
Yeah, dude. Do you see that? Like, I feel like the fire of the sun is probably representative of this dude's hog.
To continue. The sum was the highest price Turner paid for any of his pictures during his lifetime, and it remained in his possession until his death.
Oh, he made a habit of this.
Apparently? Also, I would like to note the wording, paying just over 480 guineas for the work when it is offered at auction.
He bought it before then, seems like.
Yeah, when else is he supposed to buy it? Before it's offered at auction? Yeah. After it's offered at auction? Would we even be talking about it in Christie's timeline if it were not auction-based, this purchase?
Yeah, did he buy it in a private sale and then lose it somehow?
Also, this sum was the highest price Turner paid for any of his pictures during his lifetime.
I didn't even notice that. Dude, how much do you think he paid after? The highest price. His soul! J.M. Turner, famed ghost, is some say he's still out there trying to buy back his paintings.
He is bound to the earth by his purchase.
Give it back. I want that boat on fire. The museum is just done with it.
They're so over his ghost. In 1837, Victoria becomes Queen of England, marking the start of the Victorian age.
You gonna take credit for that too, Christie's?
Apparently. I would also like to note that this allegedly begins the start of the Victorian age, because some people do not limit it to the reign of Queen Victoria, despite the fact that the reason it's called the Victorian age is because of her.
Oh, you're just gonna open up that argument here. You can pull Christie's.
If you want to fight about when Victorian age happened, email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Someone's gonna want to. I'm getting increasingly baffled at why the Christie's history, or the Christery, if you will, continues to just sort of note other world events. Like, they do know that when you're talking about your business, you don't have to talk about, like, every... It would take a long time if every single company was just like, and that's when the Great War broke out. We continued to sell plates. Like,
1848. The 40-day sale.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no, Mr. Christie!
The Stowe House sale of the Duke of Buckingham's collection takes place over 40 days and includes a portrait of William Shakespeare.
Huh. Dope.
Is Lent 40 days?
It is. 40 days and 40 nights.
Is it to mark this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Jesus, he saw that and he was like, dag. I gotta say, saying that your sale took 40 days, I know that what they're going for is we have so much stuff. What I get is, like, we're really bad at planning. we are understaffed.
Also in 1848, Christie's would like us to know that revolutions in pursuit of democracy break out in many European countries.
Oh, an addendum. We rubbed our greedy little hands together. We just thought, God, I just can't wait for the influx of artifacts. Christie's loves a bloody revolution, huh?
1876. Days after it is sold at Christie's for a record price, a celebrated Gainsborough portrait of Georgiana, Duchess of Devonshire, is cut from its frame by Adam Worth, a thief known as the Napoleon of crime. For 25 years, the criminal mastermind kept the painting for his private delectation, hidden in a false-bottomed trunk.
Did it say private delectation on the slide?
Uh-huh.
I hate that. I can't articulate, but, like, I don't like it to the point where I'd say I hate it.
Also, if the phrase Napoleon of crime sounds familiar, it's because Sherlock Holmes describes Moriarty as the Napoleon of crime to Dr. Watson in The Adventure of the Final Problem by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, published in 1893. Now, you'll notice that this bullet point is from 1876, plus 25 years for the thief to keep the painting hinted. That is 1901. So, like, do they call him the Napoleon of crime as a Moriarty reference? Or is Moriarty called the Napoleon of crime as a reference to Adam Worth?
Oh, shit.
chicken, egg, figure it out. We don't have time. Because also in 1876, Christie's wants us to know that Britain's Queen Victoria becomes Empress of India.
Yeah, hey, Christie's, I would have left that one out.
Here's the thing. They're noting a series of historical events that have no direct and obvious relation to the Christie's, but all seem to herald, oh, hey, we're about to get a bunch of stolen shit.
I was just about to say, like, Christie's loves a bloody colonization, too, it seems.
Listen, when people die, they get to sell shit.
God Christ.
1877. Sale of the H.S. Marine Chronometer by John Harrison, the timepiece that enabled the calculation of longitude at sea. A self-taught clockmaker, Harrison solved a problem that had plagued mariners for centuries, with discovering the longitude once common parlance for scientific impossibility.
Huh. I didn't know that. Thanks, Christie's.
Thanks, Christie's.
Last time I'll be saying that.
So rude. 1892. Christie's sells its first impressionist painting, Figure dans un café, or L'Absinthe, by Edgar Degas. Exhibited in the 1877 Impressionist Exhibition, by the Department of Redundancy Department, apparently. When it arrived at Christie's, the work was already notorious. Degas had been forced to state publicly that his models, apparently drinking absinthe in a seedy Parisian café, were not alcoholics.
Okay.
I would like you to contrast this entry to this very next one. 1912. Klimt's Golden Muse. Gustav Klimt paints Portrait of Adele Bloch-Bauer, the famous society hostess who became the subject of several paintings by the artist, including the mesmerizing Golden Portrait of 1907. The work is confiscated by the Nazis in 1938, but restituted in 2006.
Huh.
Find the mention of Christie's in that sentence. Christie's was not present for the painting of it in 1912. They weren't the Nazis confiscating it in 1938, and they apparently had nothing to do with its restitution in 2006.
Christie's just a big fan of Klimt?
Apparently. I would also like to contrast it with the previous one, where 1892 is the year Figures dans un café was sold, and not the year it was painted, which was 1877. So Christie's is not consistent in where it places things on its chronology?
Christie's writer off the shits, I see.
So apparently, a painting or work of art can enter the Christie's timeline at any point between its existence and now.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not it passed over Christie's auction block.
Yes. If Christie's looked at it, it belongs to Christie's now.
If Christie's heard third hand that it existed at some point, it belongs to Christie's now. But we have to move on. Because also in 1912, the Armory Show in New York introduces modern art to the United States. A mistake? Yes.
Absolutely.
1914. Egon Schiele's Herb Stone, or Sunflowers, is painted.
Okay, again, Christie's.
It is subsequently thought to have been lost during the First World War, but is rediscovered by Christie's experts in 2005. Why this didn't go under 2005 in the timeline, no one knows.
Art facts, I get, like... Is it to break up, like, you're just like, oh my god, how many more slides do I have left?
Too many. 1939. The film The Wizard of Oz is released. Christie's will later sell the sparkly red slippers worn in the film by Judy Garland.
So put it there!
Christie's would also like us to note that 1939 is the year in which the Second World War begins after German troops invade Poland. More Jews and other Europeans flee to Britain and the United States.
Christie's, given your history with these statements, I wish you wouldn't.
Christie's, could you not?
Yeah, Christie's, could you stop, actually?
Christie's, what if you weren't war profiteers? 1966. Christie's bicentenary is celebrated with an exhibition. Over the course of just under 3 weeks, it is attended by nearly 15,500 people.
That's a lot.
200 years of Christie's. Also, the first Christie's sale of wine takes place since the end of the Second World War.
Wow, great.
We know that wine sales end up going great for them.
Yeah, I can't wait to start getting tricked.
1970. Diego Velázquez's portrait of his assistant, Juan de Perea, becomes the first lot to sell for more than £1 million. Now, whether this has more to do with the art, or more to do with it being 1970 and inflation shooting through the roof, no one knows.
Yeah. A notable inclusion.
1971. The Death of Actaeon by Titian is sold in London, but is later saved for the nation.
What is that? Did Christie sell it?
Christie's refuses to explain what this means.
What does that mean?
No one knows.
Christie's...
It's a Christie's Mysteries.
Christie was... Chris... Can I call you Chris? what the fuck?
Saved for the nation.
What does that mean, saved for the nation?
It means it has been saved for the nation.
I don't know...
If you continue to question this, we will save you for the nation.
God, wow. I mean, yeah, I guess I'll opt for it so I can figure out what that means, Christie's.
Also in 1971, we get the decimalization of British currency.
Eh.
It means Britain stops using wizard money.
What does that mean?
So, okay, you remember in Harry Potter where there's like a long comical explanation from Hagrid about how wizard money works and there's so many nuts to a sickle and so many sickles to a galleon?
Yeah, yeah.
And it all sounds like total fucking nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
J.K. Rowling didn't make that up.
Oh.
That was legit how British money worked until 1971.
Oh.
When they decimalized it, which means they started doing 10 of this is this, 10 of this is that.
Ah.
Kind of like how 100 pennies is a dollar.
Oh, okay.
This was not true in Britain until 1971.
Oh, didn't know that.
Prior to that, they literally used wizard money.
Huh. Wizarding World real, actually.
Wizarding World real, actually.
Christie's definitely feels like that one guy at a party who's just like, hey, you hear about this thing that happened? Yeah, my cousin knew it. Like, that's Christie's right now.
Christie's Mysteries is more just name-dropping in a vague timeline that is not necessarily arranged in chronological order.
And undisturbingly violent name-dropping.
In 1983... a complete set of 10 prints of 1,000 Pictures of the Ocean by the Japanese artist Hokusai is sold in London. I would say that is 999 too many pictures of the ocean.
Yeah, hey, Hokusai? Let me talk.
Have you considered... I'd say get a hobby, but I feel like painting 1,000 Pictures of the Ocean is his hobby.
Yeah, yeah, he would just give you the side eye so hard, like, yeah, I get a what now? Why don't you look at a picture of the ocean and maybe you'll calm down?
Also in 1983... the embroidered nightcap worn by King Charles I for his execution in 1649 is sold in London.
Yeah, there it comes again.
I am honestly mostly shocked by the fact that Christie's didn't try to put that in the timeline under the year 1649.
That's pretty, yeah, like, so far they're just like, well, he did do it then. So that's relevant. Not really.
In 1987, The Sunflowers by Van Gogh becomes the most expensive painting ever sold at auction when it is bought for over £42 million. Put a pin in that.
Pin.
1990. Van Gogh's Portrait of Dr. Gatchett becomes the most expensive work of art when it is sold for $82.5 million, or £49.1 million.
Dr. Gadget?
Dr. Gadget. But you'll note that this is 3 years since the other Van Gogh painting was also the most expensive work of art.
Hmm.
And we are also post the year of inflation absolutely going batshit bananas.
That's true, yes. Hey, Christie's.
Hey, Christie's. Hey, Christie's.
I just want to talk. Stop running.
1994. The record for a manuscript sold at auction is set when Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, purchases the Codex Hammer, a rare notebook by Leonardo da Vinci.
Okay. So, were we just... New record. This is the all-time auction record for a spoon that looks... a little bit like a dog. $5. Christie's, we did it.
Your predictive powers are absolutely beyond compare.
Except that they put it under like 5 AD when dogs came up, but like...
In that same year, sale of a carved Assyrian wall panel found in a Dorset school.
Did you find it, Christie's?
No further details. They just had it.
Wall panel.
This carved Assyrian wall panel was just in a Dorset school for reasons unexplored, and Christie's apparently sold it, I guess.
Maybe. They're actually not clear.
I feel like there's a reason Christie's doesn't pursue the provenance of a lot of its sales. I think it has something to do with them wanting to make sure that every major world conflict is in their timeline. But I'm not a doctor, so who knows?
But was it saved for the nation?
God willing, we all shall be saved for the nation. 1995. Sale of Ian Fleming's gold typewriter, a gift that Fleming had bought for himself as a reward for finishing a draft of the first James Bond novel, Casino Royale.
That's actually very cheeky.
It's extremely cheeky because it's a gift that he bought for himself.
So it's a purchase that he made.
After finishing a draft. Not even the final manuscript. Not even selling it to a publishing house. Not even publishing it and having it received with worldwide acclaim. He finished a draft. And he was like, this is amazing. I should get me a gold typewriter.
Okay, but like, I know that you're coming down on him, but I'm saying that like more writers should have that kind of confidence.
I feel like most writers don't have that kind of money.
No, they definitely don't have that. But I mean, like, maybe it's a cookie. I'm just saying, I sort of admire that level of self-congratulation. It makes me wonder what his life was like before. Where like, he was just like, I got out of bed. I'm gonna buy a golden bed.
Also, Rudolf Nureyev's estate sells for 6.5 million pounds, or $10.3 million. A single pair of ballet shoes fetches 12,000 pounds, or $19,000.
Excuse me, Christie's, were the ballet shoes related to the estate?
Yeah, they were one of the items sold in the estate.
Oh God, I really don't like the way this is written.
I also just really hate that $19,000 went to a pair of ballet shoes and not me.
Well, if that's gonna get you mad, then I have bad news for the rest of Christie's history.
Yeah, I know. Christie's histories are not going to soothe my wounds. In 1997, Diana, Princess of Wales, sells 79 of her dresses for charity in a New York City auction. Each dress is accompanied by a note from Diana, who divided the collection into her fairy period and her Hollywood period.
That's so cool.
I just feel like most people's fairy period is like Ren Faircarp. And I don't think that's what Diana's was, but I also haven't looked.
She had pretty modern sensibilities from what I saw.
But did she have, like, Amy Brown modern sensibilities?
I'm guessing she must have.
Like, was there a period of time where she was just dressing in, like, very pointy socks?
I'm just picturing those, like, cheap elastic pantyhose wings. And she's like, what are you going to tell me to do? Stop? You can't.
I'm the Princess of fucking Wales. I get to dress how I want.
The Princess of Wales. And I'm wearing the fake wings.
Also, same year, the Victor and Sally Gans sale makes auction history.
Yeah, it's happening a lot lately.
Totally $206.5 million, or £122.2 million.
Great. What is in the sale?
It broke a record.
What? Nothing notable? Even the other one was just, like, some shoes.
I broke a record. I'm Christie's, and I broke this record.
Christie's,
I'm
about to
break I also made the record, and I'm going to break the record I just made, too. I'm Christie's.
It's great.
Fuck records.
Yeah, it's incredible what you can achieve when you're the one setting the goals.
In 2005, a world record price is set by a blue and white...
Yeah, sure.
Guan jar from the Wan Dynasty. Guan from the period are now incredibly rare. This guan is one of only 11 surviving narrative jars painted with scenes inspired by woodblock prints.
Neat.
Also, the creation of Christie's.com.
Wow, and we've never looked back at that in shame.
Christie's Live enables buyers to bid online.
Wait, what year is that?
2005.
Shit, that's actually pretty early for live bidding.
If you're asking when eBay was founded, that was in 1995. So Christie's is a mere 10 years late to the party.
Okay, I'm gonna give them a little credit on that.
I won't.
In that the infrastructure of the of live auctions is actually different from the way eBay does it. For the purpose of, like, a high-end auction.
Right, but they didn't have to invent the internet or the concept of online auctions.
No.
Or even the concept of auctions. They didn't even have to build their reputation.
No, you're right.
They just had to hire an IT guy.
Well, look what hiring a writer got them.
This was not a writer. This was an intern. They hired no one and nothing. 2006. Sale of a Stradivarius violin known as the Hammer for $3.5 million, or 1.9 million pounds.
Wait, could they only find records on things they sold that were also called the Hammer?
A record for a musical instrument.
Sure is, I bet. Yeah, huh? Yeah.
Named after a 19th century collector, Christian Hammer. The violin was created in 1707 during Stradivari's golden period.
God, it's Christie's is the reason that everyone always just, like, paws at any violin. Just like, is this the Stradivarius? Like, there were, like, maybe 12. Like, calm down.
Christie's is out here just stringing ribbons between two poles, running through it to break it, then going back to the same two poles and putting a new ribbon up and then running through it to break it. But and then turning around and putting the ribbon up again and running through it to break it.
But you're forgetting the in-between phase where they clap their hands to their face a Home Alone style and go, oh, will we break this new record?
2008. An evening auction of impressionist and modern art in London sets a new record for a European art auction.
Yeah, well, you know what? The interesting thing about a new record is just that, like, that just means someone wrote it down.
That just means inflation occurred in the intervening years between the sales.
And it will continue to happen until we crush capitalism.
Get on it, Christie's. Yeah, we Christie's. Know you love revolutions.
Yeah, you love it. You'll have tons of shit, but you won't be able to sell it.
Don't tell them that part.
we're gonna get them in the first half.
2011, under the heading Record-Breaking Jewels.
Yeah.
The legendary jewelry collection of actress Elizabeth Taylor becomes the most valuable private collection of jewels ever sold. Highlights include La Peregrina, a rare 16th century natural pearl which was once part of the Spanish crown jewels. For more on that, check out our pearls episode. Same year, Christie's sets 16 world auction records.
Amazing!
In a sale of post-war and contemporary art in New York.
God, yeah, no, we got the most paid for this guy no one's ever heard of. Give it up. Woo!
In 2012, George Washington's personal copy of the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights, dating to 1789, is sold in New York, setting a record for an American book or historic document at auction.
Of course. Wait. I know that, like, the record thing is, like, yeah, okay, Christie's, we get it, but, like, something is really weird about picturing him having a personal copy of the Constitution.
He wanted to remember what it said.
He couldn't remember. He's like, I gotta go to all these fucking meetings.
It's also, like, the records are getting more and more specific.
Yeah, it's crazy how that is happening, huh? It's almost like they're manufacturing reasons to brag about it.
Also in 2012... Christie's holds the most valuable sale of post-war and contemporary art ever. £240.9 million.
Great.
Now you'll notice that sounds awfully similar to 2011's bullet point, Christie's sets 16 world auction records in a sale of post-war and contemporary art in New York.
It does. It sounds a lot like that.
So either they set a record, ran through it, put up the ribbon again, and ran through it again the very next year, or they just counted this twice. Knowing Christie's, I can't say for certain which it is.
Well, no. What year are we at right now?
We are now up to 2015.
Oh, so I'm just really surprised that we didn't have a slide that said, like, 9/11. And then it was just, that was it. Like, like, yeah, sure, yeah.
The Taliban didn't have any artifacts from the steel. Wait, no. How Hobby Lobby. Never mind.
Well, Hobby Lobby got to them first, though.
Fuck. All right. 2015. Under the heading, New World Records.
Oh, boy! Yeah, huh?
Christie's sells the two most expensive works of art in history. Les Femmes d'Alger by Picasso sold for $179,365,000 and Nu Coucher by Modigliani for $170,405,000.
Yeah, hey, you know, remember that thing you said about things getting eerily specific?
In 2016, a Jean-Michel Basquiat painting sells for $57.3 million. In New York.
This has nothing to do with inflation.
A record price for the artist.
Great. For the artist. Oh, I see. Yeah.
We're not going to get less specific about our records as time goes on.
This is a world record for the guy down the street who was looking at the painting as we sold it.
This is a world record for a postcard manufactured in 1943 depicting a schnauzer.
Absolutely the most anyone's paid for that specifically.
And in 2016, again, 2016 was such a banner fucking year we needed two goddamn slides for it.
Yeah.
Just 50 years after their 200th anniversary, Christie's celebrates their 250th anniversary.
Wow, you did it. It was hard, but you got there.
They had a fuck ton of sales that I don't care about.
Christie's really is very self-congratulatory.
They celebrated this hard. They had like a million special curated sales and exhibitions and evening sales and parties. And it's just like, Christie's, you're the only ones who care.
It's just that they're really proud of the fact that they remember linear time.
It's throwing your own surprise birthday party.
It's like, it's
five been, times over.
Can you believe it's been 50 years? Since it's been 200 years, it's like, are you saying, like...
Can you believe it's been 50 years since 50 years ago?
Like, yeah, Christie's. Are you guys just coming to this conclusion?
Can you believe that Christie's travels through time at 1 second per second?
Yeah, they travel through time at the speed of regular time.
In 2017, Leonardo's Salvator Mundi makes auction history. The rediscovered masterpiece by the Renaissance master sells for a historic $450,312,500, obliterating the previous world record for the most expensive work of art at auction.
Great, Christie's.
I also appreciate that the rediscovered masterpiece was by a Renaissance master.
Yeah.
As opposed to the rediscovered apprentice piece by a Renaissance master.
Whoa. Ooh, things heating up in the Renaissance fandom.
They made me screenshot 55 slides.
Yeah, I guess the least they could have done is skim a Wikipedia article.
I will never forgive them. Which brings us to slide number 55.
Did that say, it has been 50
It's slide. 55 slides since 55 we began this fucking PowerPoint. Yeah.
And that's the most slides read on the Christie's website by Ken. Woo, we did it!
We broke another record!
Woo, record!
Speaking of records, in 2018, Rockefeller sales total $832.6 million, the highest ever for a private collection. And not only that, but the most significant charity auction ever staged, the collection of Peggy and David Rockefeller is 100% sold.
What does that mean?
They sold everything, which I guess they don't always do, which is interesting.
Well, I mean, that's true, but I'm surprised Christie's would admit that.
Also, how the fuck do you quantify the most significant charity auction?
It seems that, like, proximity to Christie's seems to be their metric.
This final shattered record concludes the official chronicle of Christie's.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
D, please. Jesus Christie's.
Jesus Christie's. What a terrible history that they've written.
And that was a fraction of it.
Can you imagine writing the history of your business and then it just keeps telling you that you did business for like 200 years?
It keeps telling you that you broke all of the records you made up and also you profiteered off of every major conflict in Western history.
Well, and I've learned nothing about the company of Christie's.
But D, they broke all those records. The records, they broke them. Did you see?
Yeah.
Did you see the records they broke?
Yeah, and they were adjacent to some
horrible... D, were you watching? D, watch me. D, watch me break a record.
Did you see?
D, watch me. Watch me break a record, D. D, watch us.
I'm surprised they didn't include the, like, the comic book record. Record for teapots.
Speaking of things Christie's didn't include, the 1985 auction of Thomas Jefferson wine.
Yeah.
The most expensive bottle of wine ever sold at auction, which is a record that they broke. And yet, for some reason, they don't want to talk about this bottle of Thomas Jefferson wine.
Oh, that's... Should we email them and tell them they left out a momentous occasion?
We should. For more on that record-shattering auction, check out our Antiques Fraud Jefferson Wine episodes.
Very funny.
They also did mention the 2017 sale of Leonardo's Salvator Mundi. However, they neglected to mention that its attribution is highly disputed.
As Ken pointed out before.
And they don't mention that it vanished. Since its purchase, it's gone missing and may or may not be located on the buyer's yacht. Maybe.
Yeah.
We're not sure. It was supposed to be exhibited, and then it just kind of didn't.
So, good job. I really love that, like, because, I can't think of a single good reason that they would maybe gloss over the questionable attribution of a Renaissance master.
When they're usually so upfront about their sales.
They're always so correct, right?
They're always so willing to admit when they've made a sale that perhaps didn't quite go the way they wanted it to, such as the Thomas Jefferson wine.
I mean, the Thomas Jefferson, like, yeah. Did they leave out the fact that Master Chairmaker, you know, like, their appraiser for, you know, chairs of a specific nature?
Oh, I forgot about our Antiques Fraud Furniture episode. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Christie's also featured in that for the appraisal of some the appraisal and sale of some questionable chairs.
Okay, I'm gonna call them egregiously fake. My favorite, if you haven't listened to that episode, real quick recap. Imagine trying to sell two chairs that later someone, like a different expert, just comes into your house and says, there weren't that many.
I know, because I own all the other ones.
That's interesting.
That were also sold in a pair. And also, I can't help but notice that there is a third identical pair also being offered for sale.
Yeah, I could.
And also, these chairs only ever seem to appear in pairs.
That's great. These chairs appear in pairs, and there's only two of them. So that's interesting, the six you've got for sale, Christie's.
So. Yeah, none of the 55 slides mention that.
Mention any of that, huh?
The 55 slides that I had to individually screenshot because there was no read as a single page option.
55. Nice. And half of them just said, like,
we broke the record we made up.
Queen Victoria died. Bummer. Like, next slide.
It's mostly, we broke a record and also some horrible atrocity happened that we're just mentioning here for no reason. We don't want you to draw any connection between these atrocities and our business, but just know that these atrocities were, for some reason, significant to the history of our business. Anyway.
I like the part where they like, kind of caught into that they're leaking that when they're like, we get a bunch of French artifacts. Also, the French Revolution happens, and then just, like, you can feel how they were like, oh.
Anyway,
a different bad thing happens. It's got nothing to do with Christie's.
But we're still including in our timeline. The timeline that we are not including the Thomas Jefferson wine on. Or the chairs.
The Salvatore Mundi one is strange, too, because, like, you could mention that it's missing and that wouldn't be your fault. Like,
yeah.
That happened well after the Christie's sale.
Like, the other painting got stolen, you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Like, it could be fine, but...
Okay. But, and you know, that does make me wonder, Christie's, why you left it out. Has it been saved for the nation?
God willing, this podcast will be saved for the nation. Breaking a world record.
For most podcasters murdered at Christie's Times.
So yeah, that's Christie's histories. A history of Christie's.
I love these Christeries.
Oh, thoughts, concerns, questions?
Wow. What a tale.
Oh, man.
I just, and I realize everyone's thinking this. This isn't, like, the most original thought anyone's ever had, but it's just, like, Christie's is an institution.
Mm-hmm.
And like, at no point do they show any signs of admitting or acknowledging that, like, the prices that they get are less about the items and more about the institution, which I get, that's not a quantifiable thing, but I know it to be fact.
See, I'm over here assuming that inflation is the reason they're getting
it's
prices.
Inflation. It's inflation too, but there is something to be said about, like, it's at Christie's, which means that it's immediately, like, the second you walk in, it's a dick measuring contest.
To see who can blow the most cash?
Yeah, and they're, like, they are not necessarily, they're not good auctioneers. They're famous auctioneers.
We're never getting into Christie's. Well, Christie's is never going to appear on this podcast. None of their experts will ever talk to us.
None of our experts listen to the, like, they're like, oh, gotta brush up on clocks today, but our load of antiques freaks.
I feel like if we approach them, we're like, we'd like to interview for our podcast, Antiques Freaks. They might have the same intern who made this slideshow listen to an episode or two, particularly if the episode has Christie's in the title.
You know what? Actually, what we should do is I'm gonna write down the date this airs.
Uh-huh.
And every week, once a week, I'm gonna check the Christie's website and see if it has changed in any way that might be related to the statements we've made. And in that way, we will see when Christie's listens to this. When I said that they're not good auctioneers, I didn't mean the individuals that work for them, which are all absolutely some of the highest class in their fields.
Uh-huh.
I mean that, like, the name Christie's influences the way things work out.
I mean, you know.
Like, I absolutely did not mean to disparage the incredibly skilled and learned individuals working for Christie's.
It is a coincidence that this addendum occurs after I point out that someone from Christie's might listen to this podcast.
I was going to say it anyway. You just got to that first. I mean, I've met Christie's appraisers. who feel pretty similarly about the company as the rest of us.
Oh, good. They can listen to this podcast in secret.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, sources for this episode.
Yeah.
Christie's.com.
Whoa. Really?
Really. All 55 fucking individually screenshotted slides.
You're gonna make the fucking Christie's intern reading, listening to this fucking cry.
Tears of joy because I'm the first person who've read all 55 slides?
Possibly. But you also pointed out all their chronological inconsistencies.
I don't blame them for it. They're a fucking intern. They weren't paid.
Can you imagine if this was a paid thing?
I can't. I cannot do that.
We only my don't blame you if you weren't paid.
My suspension of disbelief does not extend that far.
Christie's, we love you. Please hire me.
Not Ken, just D.
Well, Ken, do you want a job there?
I mean, I want a job.
Ken, please hire Christie's.
Yes.
To be on the podcast.
Wait, hang on.
Oh, world record broken for most Christie's on a podcast.
World record broken for most podcasts sponsored by Christie's.
Oh my god, that's how we're gonna get them. They can't turn down a world record.
So the other source for this episode was Wikipedia.
Most highly...
In a shocking turn of events.
Yeah.
Most podcast episodes researched on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Just kidding. We do not have that record. We never will.
We physically can't. Yeah, no. Christie, if you're Christie's, consider the world record of most money given to a small independent podcast.
Ooh. Consider the record of most money donated to a single Patreon.
Yeah. Yeah. That would look so good on 50. Slide number 56 is gonna look so fucking sweet.
It's gonna be so fucking choice. If you would like... Hey, Christie's, if you'd like to get in touch with us to break this record,
Christie's,
you can contact us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends. If you, Christie's, would like to supply yourself with some vintage goods for auction, you can check out our Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. Or if you really do want to break that Patreon podcast sponsorship record, which we highly encourage you to do,
please,
you can go over to our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where we have deleted scenes for you to listen to, and you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month. If you have not received your postcard, please get in touch with us, because we would like to fix that.
Yeah.
We would like to get you your postcard.
Yeah, sometimes stuff just happens, so, you know, just reach out and touch Faith. And Fate will give you a postcard.
Special shout out to our current patrons for keeping the podcast lights on, paying for our hosting fees, and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
Yes.
And thank you for listening.
Especially you. Oh, hold on. I have to have a plug.
Go for it.
For some reason we haven't been doing this. If you really love us, if you could just go on down to whatever podcast app you're in and throw us a review. I would prefer a 5-star review, but you're your own person. That would be awesome.
That's true. It's been like 70 episodes since we've mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah. Which is weird. Because, like, that's how podcasts get known. So if you enjoy the podcast and you want other people to enjoy it, if you throw us a rating, again, ideally 5 stars, but don't let me influence you too much, that would be incredibly helpful to us.
Again, if you rate it 1 star and just type dick butt, that still helps us.
But I would prefer you didn't, is the one thing. To the guy who rated us poorly on iTunes.
Thank you, because you helped us.
Thank you very much. It was possibly the funniest thing I'd ever read, and I'm so sorry. Like, I am genuinely sorry that it didn't work out for you, but you were actually really polite, so thanks.
We appreciate your feedback.
We appreciate everything. Like, we get it.
And we appreciate you, dear listener, specifically you.
Specifically you.
Goodbye.
Bye.